Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian Show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hey, guys.
And also Simran.
Oh, I just realised it's our, like, first show back to all three of us in a long while. It was
of
December.
2024. Yeah,
yeah, it's our first show of 2024, but since mid-December 16, I think, was our last show.
But even then, Simran wasn't there for
that. Oh, was she not?
No, it's been a while. It's been a while.
God, it's been ages.
Might even be our anniversary episode that was the last one.
I was thinking
that
just now.
Yeah. It's been a while.
All right, well, hi.
Hello.
How nice to be back together, everyone.
I know. You know what? The joke thing, Halima came in, was like, oh, my tan's all gone.
I feel like it has.
Oh, my God. No, but we're looking at you sat next to Carlos.
Guys, it actually has. Like, it's gone compared to what it was. When I was actually out there, that's when you should have
like,
seen
Like, even
me.
When I saw you on him last Saturday. Like,
it's gone down a bit, innit?
No, I'm saying, like, when I saw you then compared to pictures.
Yeah,
like,
me and
Simran were looking at pictures when we were together, and we were like, what is going on?
Yeah. That's because I was sunburned. I had sunburned, which I spoke about in the last
episode.
Don't
get sunburned, guys.
Yeah.
But I want to know, because Simran wasn't on last week, how was Berlin?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, guys, Berlin was so fun.
Did you go techno?
It was.
Yeah, apparently the nightlife is really good in Berlin.
That's what we went
for. How was it? What was it? Just like a little city getaway?
Yeah, just like three nights. Yeah. It's really sad because now I like really miss Berlin. Like I miss who I was 2 weeks
really?
Ago. Is that really sad?
No, it's not sad.
I was on annual leave and I just felt so free. Like we're waking up at whatever time, going to sleep at whatever time. We weren't really doing anything because both of us had been Berlin before and done the sightseeing.
Okay.
So it was very like chill vibes. Yeah. And then it was just like, yep, it gets to like 4 o'clock. Yeah, let's start drinking. Let's start doing our makeup. Let's start getting ready. Let's just go out, you know? It was honestly, the vibes were incredible.
I'm so sorry that you're back. Yeah. I'm very honestly, commiserations.
And
that being said, the weather is relatively nice at the moment.
Oh, but guys, it was sunny yesterday and today.
Yeah.
No, the weather's been nice. The weather was rubbish in Berlin. It was raining.
Yeah.
It was like, it was basically like
the vibes carried it.
But the vibes just kept it going, honestly, man. And you know, me and Carlos, we were talking about like fashion and stuff. And like, I'm not gonna lie, everyone was dressed like you'd see in England. Like it wasn't like, to be fair, it was probably me looking like a tryhard walking around in black. All I packed was black. I did not pack anything of color.
Oh. But all in all, what would you give it out of 10?
I would give it an 8 out of 10. I would give it a 10 out of 10 if we got into Berghain, but we didn't.
Oh, is that about the biggest club?
That's the club.
Yeah. Oh, what do you mean you didn't get in? They refused you.
It's like one of the hardest clubs to get into in the world.
Why?
Like you can like queue for hours and then you get to the front and they just look at you and they just say no.
Really? Why? What's the like
but we
criteria?
We didn't queue. That no one knows. So like,
We only queued for a little bit.
We didn't queue for like hours or anything. We queued for a little bit and then we made friends with these German people and they were like, yeah, we've literally never ever gotten in. Like we've tried a bunch of times, we've never gotten in. And then we thought, okay, maybe we'll get in like with these German people. Nope. You literally go to the front and they look at you and they just go, 9, and then you just walk away.
Swear down.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's harsh. I'll start crying then and there.
But then you just go somewhere else. Yeah, it wasn't really
like that. I feel like it's like one of those in-person Tinder videos, like smash your pass things.
Yeah.
That's kind of, no, because, you know, so like we got to the front of the queue and then what they like, it was so strange. I'm almost embarrassed to like say this on radio, but who cares? We had to like walk like a 10-step catwalk. Like it was just like 10 steps, very quick, but you just have to like walk in front of the like 5 people that are on the door. And then after doing that walk, they were like, no.
Is that to see like whether you're too intoxicated?
No, I think it was just to assess how you look.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
Nah.
But like, there's like all these like TikToks and people that give advice and they're like, you know, look confident and don't look nervous, but like don't be too loud and don't, you know, you can't wear color. So like I'm looking at the queue and everyone's like silent, head down, everyone's in black. I'm like,
everyone's
this is
nervous,
kind of cringe.
Everyone's going pitter patter.
Yeah, I was like, first of all, this is kind of cringe.
It is, man.
but if I had gotten in, I would not be seeing this. It's cringe.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's like them guys that are like, all right, when they move to and they get rejected and they're like, all right, you're butters anyway.
Are you clapping? Yeah. Anyway? They were like nine. I'm like, well, I don't want to get in anyway.
Yeah.
Just queued up for a couple hours. No particular reason.
I don't want to get in anyway. Like thankfully, we did not queue for more than like half an hour.
I would start screaming, racism!
Well, on the first, so we tried it. I tried it and I was like, well, I thought like maybe, but then we were with like six white people and they were all German.
Have you seen who was getting in?
It was actually a mixture.
Like what kind of people were getting in?
But as in race-wise,
No, as in like what?
In general, like what?
Oh, everyone was speaking German. Like they say it's a big thing that like you have to be speaking German. You basically, you can't be a tourist. And what I think that means is you can't be British, which,
I can't hate him for it. I can't hate him.
Because me and my friend, we were literally giving Brits abroad. I'm not going to lie. Not in the queue. We were being sensible in the queue, but I'm thinking some parts. One thing I've realized about German culture is I just didn't see a lot of people smile. Like in the daytime,
I've heard that.
Walking around the town and stuff, people were not smiling. I'd smile at people, they wouldn't smile back. They'd just be staring.
Yeah, but they're not very friendly.
And I just think we were giving Brits abroad, not in an annoying way, but in just the fact that we were like smiling and happy and laughing.
Yeah.
Well, that's the way you want to give it, isn't it? Rather that than like, yeah, being like...
I don't think we were being annoying. Maybe to them we were being annoying, but it wasn't giving like horrific Brits abroad vibes. But no,
yeah,
it was a great trip. The vibes were great. Yeah, I just don't think they like British tourists very much.
You know what? When you like travel, especially like around Europe, you realize a lot of them don't like British tourists very much. Like,
and I don't blame them.
Like,
oh, I will say, like, I got out of the cab to go to that club, and in front of our cab was another cab where five Americans got out. And when I say American, I mean American. Oh, really? One of the guys got out of the cab, and I didn't even know people spoke like this in real life. He goes, "Yeah, that's mad goated."
Oh my god.
And I said to my friend, I said,
They're not getting in.
And they didn't. And they didn't.
God. Interesting. I never heard of this place before.
Yeah. Oh, and there was another club, which is apparently like one of also the hardest clubs to get into in Berlin. And four British people, two separate groups of British people in front of us got rejected at the door. So I was like, I need to think of something to get in. Duolingo Spanish.
What did you do?
Well, I went to the guy at the front and I was like, oh, do you speak Spanish? In Spanish. And he was like, oh, I speak a little bit of Spanish. Yeah. And he was like, oh, I speak a little bit of Spanish. Do you speak German? And then I said, no, my German's really bad in German. So then he spoke English. Like, he initiated the English conversation. He was like, so well, do you speak English? And I was like, oh, a little bit, in like an accent.
Oh, you funny.
And then
girl,
I spoke like broken English.
Oh, you
and then we
funny
got
in- girl. Someone give this girl an Oscar.
And I was not very sober at this point. So the fact that I thought of that.
And they were able to have those free conversations whilst.
Yeah, well done, Simran, multilingual queen.
Thank you.
Duolingo does work.
Thank you, guys.
Sponsor us, please.
Yeah. Get that big word in here.
But another part.
Yeah, good reviews on Germany.
Yeah, another part of your trip, though, that I did see is you had a bit of a celebrity run in.
Wait, did I miss this? Who did she run into?
I don't think you'll care, but she does.
Guys!
So what?
Oh my god, guys. I met James Blake.
Oh yeah, I think I did see that.
Guys, I met
So did you actually meet or were you just like in his vicinity?
Oh no, I love James Blake.
So I was saying to my friend,
I'm gonna cry.
I was saying to my friend in Berlin, I gave basically a James Blake song came on, or like a song that was produced by him, and I literally gave my friend this massive speech about why
Blake.
I think James Blake is like one of the most talented artists and producers alive right
He's
now, and that he has like a couple of his songs are like the most underrated songs ever of all time. I literally love that man's music. And I've been such a big fan since like 2017 because I saw him when he opened for Kendrick Lamar. And anyway, such a weird coincidence that I gave this whole like 5-minute long speech about how talented he is. We're in the airport and he's dating Jamila Jamil.
Yeah.
So we're in the airport. We just got our bags, walking like to leave. And then I literally grabbed my friend's arm and I was like, that's James Blake. That's James Blake.
No way.
That's James Blake.
What, was he just like and chilling then- by himself?
He was getting his bags. He was with Jamila. They were looking at the screen or whatever. And I just thought, like, I have to say something.
Were they not surrounded
so I literally
by
went
people?
Up to him. No, he's not that famous. He's only got, like, 400K followers.
True saying, also, like, people don't know his face. Mm. Like, a lot of people don't know his face.
That, exactly.
Well, she, and, I would have thought she was...
Yeah,
like,
she's a lot more known, I think, for her face.
She's very well known, I would say.
Yeah.
So I went up to him and I just went, "You're James Blake."
Oh my God, no, not a starstruck moment.
And he was like, "Yes." And then I'm such an idiot. I called Jamelia, like the singer.
Simran.
And then she didn't correct me, bless her, but he did. And then I was like, "Oh, sorry. I was like, "I'm sorry." And then we were just talking, chit chat, like, and then I had to say something. I was like, "I just think you're really talented. I had to come and say hi." But like, you know, ever since then, and then I was just like, "Okay, well, bye, like, take
care."
Was
he nice?
Like, it was really chill. Yeah, they were both really lovely. Yeah. But I have not stopped thinking about what I should have said. Like, I should have said, "Oh, I saw you in 2018. I'm such a big fan. I was supposed to see you last year in September, but I couldn't." Like, I literally was so upset that I couldn't go see him last year in September that, like, it's just been on my mind. And now I've met him, I'm like, I should have just, like, said so many things. Anyway, gassed.
I know what you mean.
Good,
like,
for you.
Have you ever seen Community, the TV show? No. There's a scene in that, like, you know Donald Glover?
Yeah.
Like, he's obviously one of the main actors in it, and there's a point where one of the characters fakes their death, so then their will gets carried out, and one of the wishes is for Donald Glover's character to meet, I think it's Lamar Burton, something like that, like, basically this celebrity that he's idolized, and there's this really funny scene of Donald Glover just going crazy because he's like, "I told him a million times I never want to actually meet him because I can only disappoint him. I can't, like, I'm never gonna know the right thing to say," sort of thing.
I don't know who I could meet that I would be that starstruck, but I don't think I would be maybe Shah Rukh Khan.
I actually think I'm his biggest fan. I've not met anyone that likes him.
Yeah.
I think there's no one else that likes him more than me. And the fact that I've met him now and I kind of fumbled the conversation is really
annoying.
No, you
didn't. Like, you met him. You had a good chat.
Yeah,
like,
no, it
was nice.
Fine. But I should have just, like, composed myself a bit more and actually thought about what I wanted
to say. But
to be
fair, like, you weren't expecting it. Like, it came from
nowhere. It came out of nowhere. Yeah. But, like, 2 days after, I gave this massive speech about how I think he's amazing. Yeah.
No.
Like,
that
was
God's.
So God's I favor. Literally, I was like shaking, like my legs were shaking, my hands were shaking afterwards. Like, I was honestly starstruck.
There is a lot worse things you could say. Like, I think about like the first couple, it was like literally the first week that I started at Asian Network. I was also at the Asian Media Awards the first year, like the year before we all went together.
Yeah.
And the people introduced me, and someone like introduced me to harpsichord, and it's like, "Oh, you know Carlos, blah blah blah," and I was just like, "Oh, like fangirling." I literally said the word "fangirl," and I literally was like, "What?
God,
why did I say it?" But I had a couple of drinks, but I was also just like, "Why?" Like, yes, harpsichord, if you're listening, I'm sorry. You definitely
He's not
don't.
A weirdo.
You definitely don't remember that. But yeah.
James Blake, if you're listening, I'm also sorry, and I love you. Been loved you for 7 years,
but. The reason why I wanted to bring this up in particular is because he's also been in the news recently, hasn't he, because of his Twitter.
Yeah, so like literally a day after I met him, now then he went on like a long Instagram, like typed out rant thing, and now he's making loads, like he's basically making headlines.
Yeah.
Wait, why? What do you mean?
I'm like, how weird.
So just to read out a bit of what he said, "Something I keep seeing is if you're lucky enough to go viral, just use the exposure to generate income some other way. Musicians should be able to generate income via their music. Do you want good music or do you want what you paid for? If we want quality music, somebody is going to have to pay for it. Streaming services don't pay properly. Labels want a bigger cut than ever and just sit and wait for you to go viral. TikTok doesn't pay properly and touring is getting prohibitively expensive for most artists. The brainwashing worked and now people think music is free. And by the way, since it's cheaper to produce fast synthetic music to drop on streaming every week to capitalize on the strengths of the model, watch how the model is preparing you for AI-generated music that pays musicians nothing at all."
Sounds like he's just a bit fed up.
Yeah. No,
he's got a point,
everything
though.
He's saying is correct, to be honest.
But it's, I think especially from his experience where people only really discover his music through clips that go viral, his only the songs that he produces for people like Travis Scott, like those ones, and like I think that's, you know, for someone who is a massive fan of his own individual discography is actually so good, it's unbelievably good. And he's been he's been producing music of that caliber for years, and I can understand like why you would be frustrated if you were in that situation.
Yeah. Well, I think it's clear that he's stuck to his guns in general now, and he hasn't like sold himself, sort of thing. Like there are people who do kind of, like he was saying, like they do kind of just think, okay, what can I do next that is going to send me viral, rather than what's
Yeah, but if the money's not paying, I understand why the exposure could be good for a smaller artist. Because like, obviously we've seen that how TikTok can do wonders for people's careers, right?
Yeah, but we've had this conversation on air so many times about like the age of streaming and how it's kind of making quality music production a lot more difficult, especially something like TikTok where everything is geared towards being a trend.
Yeah.
And I feel like now tours are really reserved for like super artists like Taylor Swift, Drake, The Weeknd, like really, really big artists. And now you find the smaller artists, no, they're still big, but they're not like hyper celebrity level. They're doing more like individual shows where like they'll travel to a city, do like a smaller theater, and it'll be quite ad hoc compared to like, you know, these are my tour dates here are 46 shows.
True thing.
Yeah.
Big up James Blake.
Yeah, we love you, James Blake.
Big up James Blake. Anyway,
do you have a favorite song of it, Simran? We can play it now.
Oh, I like Loading. I like it's called Fire the Editor. Those are off his new album. And then I have this other song called Tell Them, which is really good. And then this one song that I think is like the most underrated like hip hop song ever is Mile High with Travis Scott. Play Mile High.
Next on the agenda, what Halima wanted to discuss in Sri Lanka.
Oh my God.
To give a bit of context, the organizer of a white party, yes, you heard that correctly, in Sri Lanka has apologized after the event sparked a backlash online.
Further context, obviously, with everything that's going on between Russia and Ukraine right now, there is a sizable number of both Ukrainian and Russian citizens who have fled to somewhere like Sri Lanka. And they've kind of set up like, I think it's like a few hundred of them, like 300-400 maybe.
Well, even like to the extent that this area is being called like Little Moscow now.
Yeah, like, so like it's a sizable community, and they've obviously set up shop over there and kind of gotten very cozy, very comfortable. And then recently there was some controversy because they created an event which was, they called, what was it, an all-white party?
Yeah, literally. So it specified a white dress code, as in wearing clothes, but then also had a line saying face control white.
Yeah, so essentially they threw this event and they said that it was just only for white people, like the face control white, which is crazy. It's so crazy. It's like, I'm sorry, but like the audacity of like a certain demographic of people, because we have spoken on the show before about, you know, this kind of phenomenon of Ukrainian people coming to the UK following the invasion of Ukraine. And then having, this is following a Channel 4 documentary, having issues with kind of like integrating their Ukrainian children with ethnic people and Muslim people, like ethnic and Muslim kids in schools and things like that. And we've spoken before about how audacious that is, especially in the kind of context of you are facing invasion. They've come for round two, guys. These men have come for round two. Now they've gone to Sri Lanka. They've gone to a brown country and they've created an all-white party, and they're telling the natives in that by the way, you men are running from invasion. Like, you lot are running for your life. How are you having time to party? That's first and foremost. Secondly, the audacity to go to a country that has taken you in, that has given you refuge, and tell them, we're going to have a party, you lot are not allowed because you're not white.
NFI, not flipping invited.
Not flipping invited. It's crazy. Like, you got bigger priorities to be dealing with, my friend.
Also, I'm a bit confused. Like, I'm in no way saying that they shouldn't be there, but I'm also like, of all the places that they've gone to,
why would they not go to Sri Lanka? It's a bloody island paradise. I'll tell you what, though, I love Sri Lanka's response to this. I think they handled it very, very swiftly, very deftly, like.
So it's literally like later on the same day, Sri Lanka said that it had ended long-term tourist visa extensions for both Russians and Ukrainians. So for context as well, more than 288,000 Russians and nearly 20,000 Ukrainians.
Wow. Oh, Rob, that's bare off them. I thought it was a few hundred. Yeah, that's bare.
Have traveled to Sri Lanka since Moscow's invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah. But then that's like so many, such a small group has now ruined it.
Well, that's the only thing that I'm at. I'm like, when I first heard that, I was like, good riddance. But then I thought, there's obviously going to be a certain number of Ukrainians and Russians that don't hold these views and haven't acted
probably
this
quite
way.
A big number. Yeah, so I'd say this is obviously a very small population.
I don't know. I don't
party.
Know about big number.
No, but I mean involved in the party.
Well, this is the thing. Like, I'm not gonna lie. I don't think the question is how many were involved. I think how many agree with
that is true.
With but you know,
I feel like
yeah. But then do they also deserve to get their visas revoked when they had nothing to do?
Yeah.
I can't lie. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it is a bit. It is shit because there are people obviously who are in need. Given the colonial history of the subcontinent and what happened last time a group of white people had gone over, or what typically happens in history when groups of white people go over to other people's land, I'm not gonna lie, I think they're very fair to just be like, this is the visa restriction.
Oh yeah, I like it.
Yeah, I think it's very fair to just be like, this is the visa restriction. Like, if you know what this is, f*** around and find out. If you look, cannot act right, I'm sorry, there's no place for you here. And I don't think it's mad. The same Ukraine that was pushing black and brown people off of coaches and trains when there was a literal invasion and them man were trying to escape. Not mad at it.
Yeah, but again, I do feel like there will be a certain number, even if it is a small number.
It's a shame.
Yeah, I feel bad for them.
So do
I. It's just a mad situation to continue to be racist in.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's mental. Like, the kind of, like, essence and nature of racism is so kind of formidable and so pervasive. It's like, not only are you in a whole geographical context where you don't necessarily belong, you have gone there as like refugees or whatever, like, you know, migrants seeking protection because your home country has been invaded or like you're in war. And still the one thing that you remember to take with you, because I bet you there's bare of your belongings and your possessions that you couldn't take with you. Your favorite t-shirts, your favorite shoes, they're all at home. But the one thing you remember to take with you is racism. That's mad. That's crazy. Say you lot will die without it.
It is very mad that this is obviously the second instance that we're at least discussing on this show.
Yeah.
Of the same demographic
of people.
Same thing. It is.
Yeah. I mean, and it's no, yeah. I mean, anyone that knows kind of like that area of the world. I mean, Ukraine certainly and Russia, they definitely have a huge, this is like just kind of objective fact. They do have a huge issue with kind of far right extremism and racism in their countries. Like, but the fact that they're even kind of carrying it with them as though it's like precious cargo during times of war is insane.
Yeah.
Anyways, good for you, Sri Lanka. You dealt with that quickly.
Yeah, to be fair, like, at least they didn't do nothing. At least they weren't just like appeased.
I think you know what it is. It's not like I don't think it's a bad thing because the people who are actually thinking about the logistics of it now, it's not that they can't continue their visa. It's just that they'll have to go through another round of visa processes, which I don't think is. I think from Sri Lanka's point of view, like, it's very fair due diligence.
Yeah, to
right?
be fair, like, now that you're saying it like that, I am realizing that, yeah, like, obviously these type of visas couldn't last forever. And
yeah,
this, like, yeah, it's
because I'm sure initially Sri Lanka would have just given them a lot of like visa exemptions because of their situation. They invited them in, the people took the piss, like, literally, you know, kind of stabbed them, like, bit the hand that fed them. And now Sri Lanka would be like, all right, come on, find out. You want to act like that? Like, let's go. Good for you.
Go Sri Lanka.
Yeah, go Sri Lanka. And it's not to say that they can't continue being there. It's just that they'll have to, like, check your people, innit? Like, if you want to stay here, check your people.
You know, like, when, what's it called? When, like, you're in school and, like,
if the whole class gets detention.
Yeah, literally that. This is what it is. Yeah. Final point of discussion from us today. Not something that's overly pleasant, no. But just in terms of global news in the South Asian subcontinent, There has been news of a traveling vlog couple that are basically, they were aiming, I think they're from Spain originally.
Yeah.
They were trying to basically visit every country. And they were recently in India, and unfortunately it's come out that I believe the male partner was attacked and the female partner was quite severely sexually abused whilst in India.
Are we allowed to say?
Well, I mean, I don't know. That's the thing.
She was...
You're saying all the sad.
Yeah, okay. So basically, it's a couple and they're traveling around and they basically stopped at a tourist camp. So it was a specially designated tourist camp that they stopped at in Jharkhand, which is like towards the west of India. And essentially, the male was like beaten up and the woman was sexually assaulted by 7 different men at once.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say the term for that on radio, but you guys can put 2 and 2 together essentially. And obviously they came online and immediately they kind of was like they explained what had happened to them. They apparently didn't want any like material objects. What they wanted was the women, and it was seven men and it was versus these 2 tourists. I think what had happened is that they managed to stop like a police patrol car. The police then took them to the hospital and the police station. I think as of now, or the last time I had checked, they had apprehended 4 out of the 7 men. And obviously it's like so horrendous. It's disgusting. It's like kind of, I can't even put into words how horrible that must have been for both of them, especially the woman. But then as I'm kind of like reading the news, cause so I think it's always been very well known that kind of sexual abuse has been a bit of an endemic issue in India. I think the difficulty of talking about something like this is that it's very hard to kind of hold certain things to account without giving other people license to then be like racist and like ethnically essentialized. So this is obviously not saying that like, it's not to say like, don't be fucking racist, innit? Like, but there is an issue with like kind of rife sexual assault in India. And as I'm reading the commentary around this particular case, people are pulling up like examples of cases from like years and years and years of like the most depraved sexual acts. Like I'm seeing animals that were being like sexually abused by groups of men, you know, like children, babies that are being abused by groups, sexually abused by groups of men. There have been a couple of really high profile cases of you know, women. You know, there were instances of like a woman getting sexually abused by a group of men, going to the police station, then getting sexually abused by the group of police that she went to. There were instances, high profile instances of women kind of getting sexually abused by a group of men and then kind of being hung, being burned, their dead bodies being abused. And it's kind of like, it's actually crazy. Like I saw the figures of the number of reported rape cases across like various different states over the past few years, and it's in the thousands.
Yeah,
like it's like disproportionately high. So I'm trying to
find, it was actually one of the first, we did mention it literally right at the start, Manga Masala. So I'm trying to scroll back to find.
Yeah. So like, I mean, there are several high profile cases, but
nearly 32,000.
In which is it? Did it say which state over what period?
No, in India.
Yes. Yeah, so like
in 2019.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah. No, the breakdown like state by state is even worse. Like from like.
Oh, Jaipur, 34 per 100,000.
That's crazy. Like if you look at the actual breakdown of it's I'm not even joking. Like it's in the tens of thousands for every single state across like the last like 1, 2, 3 years. Right. So there's obviously a very endemic issue. And it's just kind of like, wow. I don't even know myself how to like intellectualize or theorize this. I don't know what it could be other than just like rape culture, you know, like.
And also these are the ones that have been reported.
I was just about we to know say, across the exactly. world,
the amount in, even in this country, the amount that doesn't get reported.
Especially in a culture, you know, like India's where it is still conservative.
Where it's
and
so taboo.
Exactly. You can just imagine the amount of women who are getting sexually abused and not coming forward.
Isn't it in India, either it recently just became illegal or it still is very much legal, but marital rape?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't know. But
it's still a thing.
Like, it is, it's just such an endemic issue. Like, it's awful. There have been protests after protests by so many Indian women, like, kind of trying to gain some kind of agency over the issue, trying to make some kind of, like, constitutional change. And, like, the only thing I can really personally put it down to is just that there is such a large rape culture, which I think is owing to kind of patriarchal, the culture of, like, patriarchy, the culture of kind of taboo surrounding sex, the culture, like, lack of women's rights.
Like, just looking back at that, like, post, like, it was like beginning of 2021. I think there were a lot of high profile cases of this type of thing happening.
The Gulabi gang, was it the Gulabi gang that we were talking about?
Something along those lines. And I remember, like, when we spoke about it, I made reference to some clips, and they are literally children speaking about how, oh well, if a woman is raped, then she has to have done something, or oh, our teachers tell us that girls are also at fault, blah blah blah. Like, this is it's kind of from day one told this sort of thing.
I think this kind of culture is one of those that really relies on, like, momentum of precedent. So, like, it happens, and then, like, not much kind of political or constitutional interjecture is happening, and then it becomes accepted, it becomes precedent, it sets a precedent where it's allowed to happen. There's no incentive for men to kind of not do those things. I mean, apart from, there should be the incentive of, like, it's morally wrong, but if they're kind of seeing that this is what the culture is, this is what happens, and this is what people are getting away with, for them it's like a free-for-all, you know. And, like, they're scary, obviously, like, no woman should ever go through this, not the natives, not the tourists, but, like, it's insane that they literally did it to, because usually when you go to, especially third world countries, there's kind of like an air of, like, oh, tourists should be a little bit more protected, you know, like, a lot of people have that kind of mentality, not saying that that's right, but it just shows how, like, brazen they are, that they're even kind of targeting tourists where they know there will be higher repercussions than usual. That's how protected they feel, you know?
So, yeah, I think just anyone that is going around the South Asian subcontinent, or particularly India, just be careful.
Be very, very vigilant.
Yeah,
be
extremely.
I actually feel sick. And, like, honestly, like, the Indian government, they need to, it needs to be an overhaul, like a huge cultural, political, constitutional overhaul. Like, the kind of issue that it is right now, it's endemic. It's seeped into, like, the fabric of, like, the everyday life of the citizens of the country. And, like, it's not going to go away. It's not going to sort itself out. It requires, like, political interjecture. That's the only way it can be fixed. I felt so bad for that girl. I felt so bad. To be fair, the guy is, like, significantly older than the woman. And then a lot of people were being like, you should have done your research and, like, not taken a woman, like, a young woman, to go and stay in, like, a tourist camp. Which I do understand, but it's kind of like, why are they having to take those measures? Do you know what I mean? Like, they were in a tourist camp
where they've got tourists.
Yeah, but that's how bad it is. People being like, it's so well recorded. Like, you lot should have been in a hotel.
I also saw some people saying, oh, look at the guy. He's got barely any scrapes on him. Why didn't he do more to stop this?
Oh, no, that's ridiculous. Like, it was one man versus seven women. One man versus seven. Like,
yeah, and at the end of the day, like, obviously he will have done everything that he can do, and it's not his fault by any means. Like,
yeah, I'm sorry.
No one should ever be in that position where they're having to potentially risk their life to defend somebody from seven men sexually assaulting one woman. Like, that's not... it's the kind of gang nature of it, which I think is quite kind of like endemic to India, I would say. And I think, again, that's what points to, like, a cultural kind of rot. Like, yeah, like I said, I think it requires real, like, concerted interjecture from the government. Otherwise, it will just continue to plague the country and, unfortunately, the citizens that live there.
On a more positive note, I just like everyone to know that Simran went to Wales for the first time last weekend. And
guys, I've completed the British Isles.
Oh, sick.
But she didn't know that you don't need your passport to go to Wales.
Well, now she does.
I went to Wales with four northern girls and I asked them on the group chat if I need my passport to go to Wales.
They laugh at you.
Best believe I heard that for about every half an hour of the entire trip.
But I don't understand, if you've completed all the rest of the British Isles, then how do...
Yeah, but I flew to Scotland.
Oh,
you did need to... need your passport though? Because wouldn't that count as like a domestic flight?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
It's all right, girl.
Assuming that I did because it was an airport. And then I flew to Northern Ireland and I flew to Dublin. Oh my God, beautiful.
It is
I really want to go back.
It's lovely. I love Wales. Llandudno knows really nice. Snowdonia, like the area of Snowdon.
I want to do that stuff.
I've done Snowdon. It's very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywhere but England, man.
Have you climbed it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so have I.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere but England.
And we went to middle of Wales, like Welsh Pool, up
literally
to
like that is the like literally uninhabited.
Welsh Pool. It was in. Yeah. It was like we got this like little cottage up all the way up in the valleys, in the middle of nowhere. The nearest shop was a 30-minute drive. Like it was but it was amazing though. It was so good. They had like llamas.
Yeah, I want to do that.
They're like llamas.
I've heard this.
It was a farm and they had llamas and like it was amazing because you had like value.
But like we went Aldi or something just to get food and the people in the Aldi were speaking in Welsh and yeah. I was like, I actually had no
and
idea
also,
people really
they're
spoke
so
Welsh.
Friendly. Like Welsh people are so friendly. Like I know Southerners will say, oh, did you not think so?
We didn't really speak to any.
Oh, okay. No, when we went to Welsh Pool, they were so, 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 so nice.
That's really interesting because once me and my friends went to, it was more in South Wales, but we basically drove through Wales to get there. Mm. And we stopped to get food, like, at one point. And bearing in mind, like, at the time, it was a group of eight people, two white people, the best POC. And it was literally like...
We didn't
experience anything, but we were looking around. We were just like,
oh,
really
it was so white.
Don't feel like...
No, it's so white. That's why, like, I was a bit apprehensive. But actually, they were so nice. They were so you know what it is? Yeah. Because Welsh Pool in particular is very, like Carlos was saying, like it's in the middle of nowhere. It's very community vibe. So like everyone knows everyone. Like I remember the people that we were staying, it was an Airbnb, like a cottage, and it was like a farm. And the people who owned the farm, like they helped to come and set our fire up. And then they were like, oh, we're just going to go over to the pub. They literally pointed it out to us. They were like, can you see that little light over there beyond the valley? We're going to that pub.
Bloody
they were like, if you want to join us, feel free to pop in. It's just a local pub. Like they were so nice.
I'll tell you where we did experience like what's most likely
in Cumbria Lake District.
It's the first trip that me and my friends did as a hot group holiday. We went like just after school finished at the end of like sixth form and they literally threw biscuits at us, particularly my black friend. They literally threw biscuits at us.
Yeah, nah, fam, the racism I experienced in Cumbria.
Mate, mine was Northern Ireland. Went on a geography school trip, A-level, yeah? I'll tell you the least worst story, then I'll tell you the worst one afterwards. So my school was big South Asian, like everyone was South Asian.
Slough.
Like, people that were not South Asian in my school, yeah? We were with like four white teachers and then like 27 out of 30 brown kids, yeah? And then we're walking along this beach, we're like North Island, like, down the coast. And I remember these like two old couples separately came up to our teachers and were like, it's so sweet what you're doing for these kids, like bringing them all the way over here and showing them like the sights. And then they looked at me and they said something along the lines of like, oh, like, do you speak English?
Oh my God.
And my teacher didn't say anything. And I just turned around and went, yeah, I'm from London. And she looked at me and she was like, oh. And then she just like walked away. And I was like, right. Then we went to a different place. And it was one of those places where like it's very like politically charged. Like there was a lot of happening like during the
troubles.
And then we were like in this like gated like park area. And I was like the last one to go into the park. And as I was walking through the gates, this guy drives really close to me on the road, sticks literally half his body out the window and calls me a f-ing monkey.
Oh, I've gone, ooh, ooh, ah, ah.
everyone saw it. He drives off. I just turned around to my teacher and I was like,
Oh, sorry, Simran. That's a
No, but I was fine. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, you have to laugh in it. Teachers, you have to laugh.
Well, my teachers were very like, "Are you okay?" Like, yeah. "Oh my god," da, da, da. And I was like, "Ah, Sam, don't worry about it."
Yeah. How have we gone from speaking about a nice trip to Wales to literally how racist the because, UK is?
You know what? Because it's still the because how UK. Many times, it's still the UK.
How many times have I said this country's not ours?
Well, thank you everyone for listening to today's episode. Don't go anywhere because we have got my chat with Ash Beebe of The Traitors season 2 coming up. And yeah, it's a really nice chat that we've had, and it's really nice as well because she has actually followed Mango Masala from the very beginning.
She has, hasn't yeah. she? She's always wanted, she always Dang. likes. I didn't know Traitors, I don't watch it. And then like I've noticed this woman, she likes every single post.
Yeah,
she comments on a lot of posts. And then one day like I clicked on her profile, and she's always like one of the first ones as well to like it. And then I saw, oh my god, she was in Traitors. Oh, bless her.
But no, she's like literally one of our biggest fans.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, stay tuned for that. But the rest of you, thank you for coming today. And yeah, hopefully next week we'll have a bit more positive stuff.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Guys, for those of you who aren't aware, Simran and Carlos are both going away and I'm going to be in the UK.
Good riddance.
Someone call James Cleverly. I'm not doing this. How are you two away and I'm going to be... Nah, I'm coming with you. I'm sorry. I'm gate crushing your vacation. I'm coming with you.
See you next week. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian Show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Ash Beebe. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
No, thank you as well for obviously taking the time to speak to us. And I won't even say that it's been a long time coming in terms of this interview being postponed.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time coming as well because we've like followed each other on socials for the best part of nearly 4 years,
yeah,
I want to say.
Yeah, something. It's been a really, really long time. And I don't even remember how I came across you guys. But as soon Neither. As I did, I mean, obviously, you just cracked me up. But also, it's nice to see Asian faces doing this. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can't remember either. I don't know who followed who first. But I remember it was at a time where I think we were just trying to sort of like create a name for ourselves and just follow other Asian people doing their own thing on social media. Yeah. And I think at that time, I'm not sure if you're still doing this, but I remember you were quite like into your cooking and were doing like recipes and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And obviously, you know, since the Traitors has kind of taken over my account recently, hasn't it? You know, and like there's been no time to cook, but you know, I bet Just Eat is very happy right now.
Traitors is probably how a lot of people will know of you, and it was cool, I'm not gonna lie, like at the start of this year seeing on socials, oh wow, someone that we are actually like mutuals with, like someone that we're acquainted with, actually is going to be on season 2 of The Traitors.
Yeah.
But before that, before any Traitors stuff, I believe, do you work for, is it Transport for London?
I do, yeah. I work for TfL, so I work in the events, the corporate events team there.
Sure. So was the food stuff on Instagram, was that just kind of like a little bit of fun for you?
Well,
like...
yeah, you know actually what it was? I'm getting old and I can't remember stuff. And I remember this one day I went to go make something and I thought, and it's something that I used to make like all the time, and I'm like, I can't remember how I do this, do you know what I mean? And then I thought, I don't have my recipes written down anyway. So actually, it was more like a personal log for myself of where I record sure. all my recipes and stuff. Do you know what I mean? You know, it's crazy. I think social media is crazy because the amount of people that you meet through it, like I've actually made friends through Instagram, through my food page. And these are people that I might see occasionally or even speak to on a regular basis. So that's kind of mad really, isn't it? You know?
I agree. And I think when the internet first came about, there was a lot more of that sense of almost like kind of stranger danger. Like you don't really know who you're chatting to. But I think obviously there's still some dodgy people out there. But I also think we're at a point now where it's a lot more normal for people to find a sense of community online and actually like just chat to people. And obviously like people actually do want to go and find people that have similar interests to them and chat to them and you know what? Sort of thing.
You're connecting to people that you otherwise would never have connected with, that you wouldn't have met in any other way.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, to have people who are all around the world, that's a great thing as well. You know, I moved around a lot in my younger years, in my 20s and early 30s. So I have friends all around the world, and it's really just a good way to keep in touch with everybody, you know?
So obviously you said you have been working for TFL for quite a while. You've been doing like your food stuff more recently. What was it that made you then decide, okay, I want to apply to be on the Traitors?
It was actually because during lockdown, myself and a few of our friends, we used to play this game online on Zoom every week called Werewolf. And, you know, it really kind of saved us because it was that one time a week when you were connecting with people and, you know, before at the end of the game, we'd stay on and have a chat and have a drink together. And it was great. And so the group were talking about this TV show called Traitors. I didn't even start watching it at the beginning. They were like, exactly like Werewolf. And I was like, I think 6 weeks later, okay, fine, I'll watch it now, shall I? And, you know, I was hooked. I ended up watching it twice.
No, I think it was the same for a lot of people. I think for the first season as well, I only started watching it towards the end of when it was coming out. So then I obviously had the whole of it to watch all at once, and it was over in like a couple of days or something.
And how did you hear about it?
I don't know. I think it was my now wife that was watching it, and like she was... huge, probably through friends that she had heard about. So this was season one, obviously, like back in, and was it end of 2022? I'm losing track of the years. Yeah. The time's going by very fast. Yeah, end of 2022. Yeah, and she was watching it, and I was just kind of like hovering, and ended up getting hooked on it. But I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to ask. I think even though season one, obviously, it did really well, this, like, season two that you were a part of is just, I think it's kind of blown out of the park. I don't know, what were you kind of expecting it to get the reception that it did?
No. And this is going to sound very naive of me, but even season one, I didn't actually realize how big the show was. I only realized the enormity of it after I had finished filming my season. It was only then that it had kind of dawned on me, oh, wait, this show's a pretty big deal.
No, I definitely think there was a big sense of like anticipation as soon as people were aware, okay, season two is actually coming. Like, I think it was a good time for them to drop it as well, like start of the new year when everyone's kind of got those January blues sort of thing.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. And, you know, I've had so many people come up to me in the street even and say that it just helped them get through January because it was something to really look forward to. And I mean, I don't know if you've seen this on the social media, on the, you know, on Instagram and TikTok and things like that, but even the final, I mean, there were viewing parties up and down this country, and we're talking hundreds of people at these viewing parties. And, you know, I mean, when was the last time we saw anything like that for a TV show that wasn't a football match, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we could not have anticipated how absolutely huge the show was.
It's almost like kind of like a bit of a cult following, isn't it? And I think it also like helps that it's almost like this kind of Hun culture. They've kind of latched onto it. And obviously, as soon as they love anything, everyone kind of just gets on board of it, and the memes just provide themselves.
Oh my goodness. I mean, just the memes alone were so much entertainment. People are so clever. How do they come up with this stuff? Seriously.
Well, I mean, Claudia Winkleman in herself, like, is just a very memeable character. Like, what was it like as well being able to do something with her for television
as
well?
She's amazing. You know, I mean, obviously I knew who she was because, you know, we've seen her on our TV screens for years. And I was never really an avid Strictly watcher, so I didn't really know her personality. So then to meet her and to see her the way that she was, she's hilarious. She's very quick-witted. I find her a little bit kooky, which I really love. Like, she's just out there and she just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's her charm. And she's just brilliant. You know, she really is, actually.
Yeah, I know. And I get the impression from what I've seen in terms of, like, interviews that she's done afterwards as well, that she is very much down to earth with all of you guys. Like, you know how you might anticipate that the host of a TV show might appear like they're a certain way when they're presenting it, and then as soon as the camera's cut, they just go off to their trailer and whatever. She seems to actually have made a connection with, like, all, like, the 20 of you or however many it was.
Yeah, 22 of us. And yes, she really does, because, you know, she knows everything about us when we get to that castle. So it's kind of hard. If you can imagine, it would be hard not to get attached to the people. But even now, you know what I mean? She's so cool. Like, I think I sent her a message the other day. I'm like, Claudia, why aren't you on our screens or something? And she always answers you. She always answers you. And I just think that's so lovely. And it's, you know, as you mentioned, that just shows how down to earth she is.
Speaking about that initial conversation that you had when you first get to the castle sort of thing, obviously, from what we've seen, you were, like, putting your case forward for being a traitor. Was that always your, like, thing that you wanted to be? Were you always like, I want to be a traitor, I think that's the best thing for me? Or was it, like, a last-minute decision?
No, it was. So when I applied for the show, that didn't even come into my mind whether I wanted to be a traitor or a faithful, because, to be honest, I didn't even think I'd get in. Do you know what I mean? So I didn't even think I'd get that first call back. So but once I did, I then realized, I thought, I think being a traitor is gonna be my only hope for lasting longer than a day, because I imagine, and it's funny though, right? Because it's crazy, because it could have worked out so differently. You just don't know. But I think if I'd been a faithful, I would have been quite mouthy. Either I would have really upset the traitors, or I would have upset other people. So I reckon I would have just gotten banished or killed anyway, day one, day two. And, you know, and so this is the thing, I think, being a traitor, part of my downfall possibly, was that I wasn't relaxed enough. Do you know what I mean? You know, where you can be at that stage where you're relaxed so that people can get to know you. I didn't allow for people to get to know me. Do you know what I mean? Because I just had this immediate barrier up, which I could not have anticipated that's what I would do. Do you know what I mean? So, but the cookie crumbles, how the cookie crumbles. And I mean, everything, the dominoes had to fall the way that they did in order for the show to be the way that it was, how brilliant it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, I feel like the way that things played out as well, you might have been the first traitor to get banished, but the way that Harry was going about things, I think it was only going to be a matter of time anyway.
It really was, though, wasn't it? It really was, though, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? And I, you know, even looking back now, I remember thinking, like, Miles, you better watch out for those two. They're going to come after you. You better get ready to, like... But, you know, Miles is so sweet. So now I realise there's no way that he would have just been as conniving as the other two. Do you know what I mean?
Speaking of memes, do you see as a Mean Girls one? That was one of my favourite things. They did, like, the burn book after he got banished. Like, I mean, that is one thing that I wanted to ask as well, because obviously when we look back on it now, I mean, I'm sure it's also, like, a bit further back in time for you, because obviously we've only seen this in January, but I understand it will have been filmed beforehand. But I kind of just want to say, how do you not hold grudges? Because this is the thing that I would be like, right, I would find it so hard when there's that much money at stake. If obviously people turn around and stab you in the back, that is all, is the game's the game. But at the same time, when so much at stake, I would find it really hard to let that go. But from what I've seen, everyone's friends with each other, like, you all hang out, like, that sort of thing. So how, like, did it take a while to get to that stage, or was it easier than you anticipated?
No, like, for me personally, no, because, you know, because the thing is, I went in with my eyes wide open. To me, I was very able to differentiate between my personal feelings for people and the actual gameplay. You know what I mean? So, So that wasn't an issue for me. And, you know, had I had stayed longer, I mean, you know, a lot of my friends, the cast members are like, you're just too nice to be a traitor. Why were you a traitor? And I'm like, listen, darling, if I had stayed in longer, trust me, I would have no problems killing you off because that was my job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you have to be able to differentiate between the two. You know, and ultimately that's just what it's about. So, you know what Paul and Harry did wasn't very nice. But also, they were doing their job at the end of the day, weren't they? They needed any excuse to get rid of one of us traitors.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to get rid of Miles, so.
I don't know, like, from that moment as well, was there any part of you that thought, you know what? I reckon one or two of these could actually make it to the end, because I know there's only been two series of this so far, but this was obviously the first time that we saw a traitor win.
Mm, yeah.
Like, did you think that there was a potential for that? Or?
You know what? I thought Paul was going to win. Mm. I genuinely did see Paul. I thought he was going to win. And you know, when you're in that situation, you're not seeing what other people are saying or how other people are behaving. So I didn't even realize. I just thought everybody loved Paul, you know, and I didn't realize that some people already had suspicions of him. You know, Anthony's mentioned it. Zach, definitely. Brian had pulled up his name. Jazz, obviously, as we know. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, his name had been pulled out of that hat a couple of times and I didn't realize, but I was thinking he's going to be the mastermind. But, you know, and it turned out it was Harry. Harry was the mastermind the whole way through.
Yeah, and regardless of anything, it made for good TV as well. I mean, like you're saying.
Brilliant. I mean, you know, there was one moment actually around the round table, and I haven't seen many people talk about this and I don't understand why, but this was that first moment when I thought, oh my goodness, Harry, you're an absolute genius. So there was one point when he discussed almost verbatim what we were discussing as traitors in the tarot. And he said it at the table and he made it sound like he came up with the idea. And I thought, damn, you are freaking smart, boy.
It's worrying though. You know what I mean? Like when people are so good at that sort of thing, like I could never go on like a show like this because I can't even lie without like smiling because I just start laughing. Like when we play like kind of board games that are like similar type of thing to the traitors, I just will give up just because I'm like, I can't really keep a straight face. Yeah, so I could never do anything like this.
And you know, so this was the thing, because I've played those kind of games quite a lot, and that's why I thought it'd be a good idea to be a traitor, but I had no idea I would succumb to the stress and the pressure the way that I did. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm so used to kind of playing these games and it's never been a problem for me before, you know? But I guess real life is different though, isn't it? When you're doing something in person like that.
And I think the thing about the traitors as well is, like you said, anything could actually happen. Like there's actually no guaranteed way or how you should go about things. Like, because literally anything could, any person could have their suspicions, anyone could banish you, that sort of thing.
You know, like, I mean, it could be one little thing. And I think when you're a traitor, there's that added pressure of you're constantly thinking, oh, I hope I don't say the wrong thing. You know, I'm like, oh, are they going to find me out? Oh my goodness, how did I look then? And so when you're feeling that way, it comes out in the energy, in your energy around you, doesn't it? You know, and that's what people pick up on. And you can't really go in with a strategy either, because how can you have a strategy when you don't know who the other contestants are? Because it's very relative, isn't it? It's very dependent on who they are as people and their personalities and how you're going to gel and how you're going to get on together.
I mean, and speaking of those relationships as well, like, I mean, I think we saw at the beginning, if I remember correctly, that you were quite friendly with Sonia, but is there anyone who actually you got on with as part of those like 20, 22 people that you actually like, you know what, I actually got on really well with them and we didn't really see it on screen sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, because if you think about it, you're together quite a lot, aren't you? And you know, with the edit, like there's only so much that they can show. But I think one of the people that I'm I was always really close with in the show at the beginning was Meg and Zach. Mm. You know what I mean? Those two were my two people. And ultimately, say if I had gotten to a bit further on, there's no way I would have voted for either one of them two, you know, whether that be up in the turret or be around the round table. So those two I would have taken with me towards the end. That sounds terrible. Yeah. They're both going to kill me now. But I mean, I was even hanging out with Paul quite a bit, like some of the other lads, like, and also Jasmine and Ross. And do you know what I mean? So, yeah, that was my problem. I'm not, even at school, I was never like this. I never had just one group of friends. You know, when everybody has their little clique, I was never like that. I'm like, I don't join cliques. I don't care. I want to be friends with everybody. And that was also partly my downfall, wasn't it? Because, how else do you get to know people if you don't talk to them?
Yeah.
That was one of my arguments around the round table. I'm like, how am I supposed to make informed decisions as a faithful if I can't get to know people?
I feel like I'm forcing you to like relive that trauma right now. I'm sorry if this is triggering for you.
I'm so over it now.
Yep, sure. Obviously, the show came out in January. I think by the end of it, the figures were something like 6-7 million people watching per episode. And you all, 22 of you, obviously, like, you weren't necessarily in the latter half of the episodes, but all 22 of you have kind of been elevated to this sense of, like, I want to, like, celebrity influencer kind of status. Like, what has it been like to kind of go from literally working at TFL, doing your little, like, food vlogs to then, like thousands of people knowing who you are across the country?
It's kind of crazy. And I honestly thought to myself, and this was before the show was released and the cast were released, like, I genuinely was thinking to myself, listen, who's going to even pay attention to that middle-aged Asian woman? Nobody is even going to notice me. Nobody is going to know who the hell I am. Like, it's totally fine. And it's to have the absolute opposite happen. I am just quite gobsmacked, really, because literally every day when I leave my house, like, I always get stopped on the street, or I might be like in the local shop. So I might be in Sainsbury's or somewhere, and like people are stopping me. And even the other day, I was stood on the corner. I think I was waiting for an Uber or something, and it was dark. And like somebody recognized me. I'm thinking, dude, how did you even see me? Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of weird, though. Like, it just feels weird, doesn't it? You know? You can imagine.
I think that's one of the reasons why it works so well, though. I think it's kind of become clearer and clearer that the British public is at a point now where we really want to see people that reflect us. Mm. Like, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious which show I'm referring to, but we're kind of fed up of like seeing like the same age group, the way that people look, the way that they sound.
It's just kind of like, you're absolutely right, because people, when our show was on, people weren't even really watching that as much. Do you know what I mean? That show,
the exact thing, because it was on at the same time, and I remember thinking, I actually have no, because I've watched the other show a lot, like in the past, like I'd say the past like 7 years.
Yeah.
I think say maybe a couple of years ago I stopped like watching it like religiously, but I think I have got to the point now where I just like, I don't actually have any desire to really watch this because
And
like,
I'm the same. I did that last year. You know, I started watching it and I was like, this is just so boring. I just don't understand. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And I think you're absolutely right. People don't want to see scripted reality. You know, they want just normal, regular people, people that you can connect with. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's really the beauty of the show, the UK version, especially. I think that's why it's so huge, because it's just, we're just normal, everyday people. You know, you see us in Sainsbury's, like you can just come up to me in the street and say hello to me and ask me to take a picture, and I'm always going to be happy to do it. Do you know what I mean? So it's not, you know, like to say even celebrity, it just feels kind of weird.
Yeah, I feel like there needs to be a different word for it almost, because celebrity has become so entwined with this idea of lavish wealth and just doing like this, that, the other. But there needs to be another word for people that are just like, they're just well known, like respected figures. You know what I mean?
You know,
like,
maybe we should have another name for it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, darling, I've still got my day job. Do you know what I mean? I still got to be up tomorrow morning to work.
I wanted to ask this as well, because part of the reason why we're here today, that something that spurred on this conversation was, I remember you commented on one of our posts talking about how you are, obviously, it's a middle-aged brown woman that is wanting to go against the grain almost, and there's various struggles that are associated with that. So in regards to that, what are you thinking now in terms of how you're kind of navigating this really weird in-between that you're in, where it's like, say, you're doing your day job, but there's like a 1 in 10 or 100 chance that people are going to recognise you on the street sort of thing?
I didn't realise that I would have a platform. You know what I mean? And like you said, I don't really follow the usual Asian woman social norms. Like, I'm not really necessarily big into culture or about following the rules. You know, I'm in my mid-40s. I'm single. I don't have kids. And I am never going to have kids. Do you know what I mean? And there's no pressure on me to do so. But that's also because I created that. You know, I had to go through stuff to be at that point today. And I feel like I want to know if there's space for me in the media, if there's space for me to have a voice, if there's space for me to be out there. And I have also kind of questioned that. And then I think to myself, well, why shouldn't there be space for me? You know, absolutely. And I think I wonder if there's more people like me than I actually realize that there is, you know, and they don't have to necessarily be Asian women, but just women in general who are in their 40s, you know, who just, you know, we don't have kids, we're not married, we're just living our life and having fun.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is definitely almost a double standard there in terms of the different genders as well. Like, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is thinking about news readers, for example. You see how they always kind of have like the younger woman with like the silver fox kind of thing, and it's this sense that once a woman gets to a certain age, they don't want to like wheel her out and put her in front of the public anymore, and it's not right. Like,
no, this is the thing, and I'm at that weird age, aren't I, where I'm not young, but I don't fall into the older category either.
For sure.
So I'm kind of like in this little limbo. But there's so many women. There's so many women who are also, do you know what I mean? So I'm really hoping, I'm just currently looking at, I'm just working on getting some stuff together, getting a reel together, getting some headshots together and just, you know, going out to agents and to see where this can go. Because I've realised actually, and I didn't realize it before, but I think I want a career in this industry.
It's nice as well that obviously you've like by chance now almost have this like portfolio as well, like of you. And again, because this show it's reality TV, but it's unscripted, you've very much kind of seen yourself like on camera as you are sort of thing. And I think that's almost like the best way for people to see you as an example of what you can actually offer sort of thing.
For me also, one of the reasons why I applied for Traitors, because I didn't feel like it fell into that reality category. It was kind of more like a challenge game show type of thing. So do you know what I mean? And I think I now feel like, you know, I've been given this opportunity, and it would be really silly of me to not try and do something with it, you know?
Yeah, like, and continue riding the wave as well.
Yeah, and you know, but this is fun. Like, even doing stuff like this, I love it, you know?
Yeah.
If I could just get paid to talk all day, hello?
Trust us. We'd all love that. Even from obviously this like half an hour chat that we've been doing, I can tell that like that you feel like comfortable in doing this sort of thing, so...
You know, because to me, it's a bit like, you know, I was a bartender for many, many, many years in all the different places that I lived, the different cities and different countries. And to me, I feel like this is almost like an extension of that, because when I was behind the bar, I'm just going to talk to anybody and everybody. And that's so this just feels a very natural step, next step forward. It just feels very natural, you know?
I think also it's nice that, like, at no point I don't think anyone would look at you as you've been on the Traitors and be like, oh, okay, yeah, Ash should do a show about, like, say, like, something to do with Asian culture sort of thing. Because, like you said, that's not your bag sort of thing.
No,
like, and I think it's nice that, like, I don't think people would think that because they've seen you on TV. I mean, obviously, that doesn't mean that they have to, like, ignore the fact that you're a middle-aged brown lady. Yeah. But at the same time, like, that doesn't mean that they have to then pigeonhole you into just talking about that.
Well, this is the thing. And even if you look at my Instagram page and you look at, like, my food, you know, people expected, I think sometimes when I give people my Instagram page, they most of the time expect, oh, is there going to be Asian food? Actually, there's hardly any Asian food on there. It kind of reflects who I am as a person, my tastes. You know, even looking at my friendship groups, I have people, close friends who are from all around this world. You know, there's no one set group, there's no one set ethnicity, race, do you know what I mean? So I think that's just who I am as well, just as a person.
Yeah, it has been a pleasure chatting to you today. Thank you so much for taking the time. For anyone that isn't following you as of yet and does want to keep up with your future ventures, where's the best place for them to find you?
So I do have all of the social medias, but it's Instagram, that's where I am nearly all the time, and that's the real Ash BB. And I had to do that because someone was trying to fake my account, and I was like, ugh, now I have to be one of those idiots that calls themselves the real person.
Well, at least you know that's when you've made it. People are trying to impersonate you.